Our next presenter will be Stacy Juber, and we work with Eileen.
Mm-hmm.
Great scientist. So, assessing effectiveness of commercial soil health test, you can see commercial soil health test comparison. So, she will stir up something to show us some good results. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning. My name is Stacy Juber. I am a postdoc working at Purdue University, and as he mentioned, I'm looking at commercial soil health tests. We looked at several of them across the state of Indiana, looking at different conservation cropping systems. So there is an increased interest in these commercial soil health tests. We're trying to quantify soil health and look at the effect of these practices, conservation cropping practices. So there's an interest for farmers, and NRCS is also very interested in these tests as a way to evaluate and quantify the success of their programs. But it's important as we look at these tests to determine, are we really accurately assessing the soil functions within our systems, because soil functions are such an important aspect of our definition of soil health. We want to make sure that we're looking at those. So to try to look at that, we're assessing two different questions as part of this project. We're looking at whether we can distinguish between cropping practices. So in our case, we're looking at no-till with cover crops and no-till without cover crops. We also want to assess if we can use these tests to monitor changes over time in soil health. So this project is a large-scale project across the entire state of Indiana that's conducted by the Conservation Cropping Systems Initiative. There are 17 sites across the entire state. There are 14 on-farm sites. Those are the blue dots on the map. And we have 3 Purdue Ag Centers as well for this research. For the on-farm sites, they did differ in treatments, but most of the sites had a cover versus no cover strip. Most of those sites that are also long-term no-till. Some of the cover crops that we looked at were single species, and they varied. There were some with mixes, and some of those mixes were up to 14-way mixes. So those varied across the sites. For today, I'm going to focus on 4 of the sites, individual sites when I talk about those, and those are the ones with the green stars. We have DeSutter in northwest Indiana, Rulin in central Indiana, and then 2 southwest Indiana sites, Rocksmith and Stahl. The 4 of these have cover versus no cover on long-term no-till. They were the most consistent among our sites for the amount of cover crop biomass over the years of this study, so that's why I chose those to show today. So for our soil health sampling, those samples were collected in 2013 at the start of the study, and then later in 2015 and 16. These samples were collected between V3 and V6 in corn, which was typically early to mid-June throughout that month. These were sampled to a depth of 20 centimeters, and we collected at least 30 soil probes from each plot, and then they were homogenized and divided up to send to the different commercial laboratories. We did and compared 4 different tests. We looked at phospholipid fatty acid, or PLFA, the Earthport Biological Soil Analysis, which is a direct microscopy type of test. We also looked at the Cornell Comprehensive Assessment of Soil Health, or CASH, and then as the previous speaker did, we also used the Haney Soil Health Tool. So to answer our 2 questions, we used a different analysis. So for the first question, in order to distinguish between our management practices, we analyzed each site year separately, and this will be the 4 sites that I mentioned. They had cover versus no cover on long-term no-till. For the second question, which is, can we use these tests to monitor changes in soil health over time? I used a meta-analysis approach, essentially using each site as a separate study and using the treatment means from each of those sites to calculate response ratios. So I used the treatments that matched our criteria, which were the no-till with cover crops and no-till without cover crops, and calculated these response ratios over time. So the new measures in either 2015 or 2016 divided by the baseline data from 2013, the calculated response ratio. So So if those response ratios are greater than 1, it indicates that this soil health indicator has increased over time. If it's equal to 1, it has not changed. So to get in, starting with some of our results, this is PLFA microbial biomass. Three of the sites that I mentioned, so we have DeSutter in northwest Indiana is over on the left, then Brocksmith and Stahl, and each of these I am showing the mean with the standard error for the error bar. And you can see here, none of these were significantly different. We did have some fairly large numerical differences, but the variability was high enough that there was no significant difference. And this is a trend we've found over all most of our sites. This is one that we did see significant differences. This is the Ruhlen site in central Indiana for mycorrhizal fungi from PLFA. And at this site, we actually had three different cover crops. And all three of those had significantly higher mycorrhizal fungi compared to the no cover comparison. And in fact, the oat radish mix was actually even higher, had significantly higher mycorrhizal fungi than the cereal rye by itself. And then the annual ryegrass was kind of intermediate. So here I'm showing some of our data for the trends over time. So this is plotting the mean response ratio and the 95% confidence interval for these response ratios. So where I have that arrow, that's showing the mean response ratio of all of our no-till with cover crop treatments across all of our sites for microbial biomass. And I want to point out that I have this dotted line here, vertical line, that is showing where the response ratio is 1. So if we have a mean or a 95% confidence interval that is overlapping that vertical line, it has not significantly changed since the baseline in 2013. So for these three measures of PLFA we looked at, or just to show for time, I'm only showing microbial biomass, total bacteria, and total fungi, but we have in microbial biomass and total bacteria, cover crop is not significantly different from no cover. You can see that those confidence intervals are overlapping quite a bit, but for the cover crop, it did increase over time for both microbial biomass and total bacteria because they're not crossing that vertical line. But total fungi basically stay the same over the time for both cover and no cover. Here is just a small sampling of our data from Earthfork. They looked at the protozoa and they measured each type of protozoa separately. So we have flagellates, amoeba, and ciliates. And again, the same three sites that I showed previously. And what I want to point out on here is all of these are non-significant because you can see there are very large numerical differences, but there's also very large error bars. So there's a lot of variability in this data. And so like with the PLFA, we found very few significant differences between our treatments. Moving on to a little bit of the data from the Cornell and Haney tests, I'm just going to focus on a few of the measures from these tests. The first one I want to talk about is carbon cycling from both of these, the bioavailable carbon. Both of those tests include measures of that. So in the Cornell test, or the CASH test, it's active carbon or permanganate oxidizable carbon, and then water extractable organic carbon from the Haney test. So both of these are trying to assess the same pool of bioavailable organic carbon. So we would expect that they would be closely related. So when we get into some of our results, we can see at some of our sites, we saw that very clearly. Here we have very similar trends between the cover and no cover at all three of our sites for both active carbon and water extractable organic carbon. Neither DeSutter or Stahl were significantly different. Brocksmith was. And this is an example where we actually saw very small numerical differences that were still statistically significant, basically because they were very consistent across the different replications. Looking at the trends for both of these measures, we see that for active carbon, the cover crop actually increased over time, but the no cover didn't change. And for water extractable carbon, we saw the opposite, where it increased more without cover crop than with. So this was kind of a surprising result because we expected these to be more closely related. For the CASH quality score, so this, like the Haney test that was mentioned before, there's an overall index of soil health So the CASH quality score is an average of all of the scoring functions for, I believe it's 12 different soil health indicators that they use in their tests, and these are all averaged together to provide a quality score. So for the CASH quality score in 2015, it did not change from the baseline data from 2015, but if we look the next year in 2016, it has increased. So that change happened between 2015 and 2016 where it increased, but it increased to a greater degree, just like we saw with the Haney water extractable organic carbon without a cover crop. But it did increase for both, and that was significantly higher for the no cover. For the Haney soil health calculation, it was greater than one. The response ratio was greater than one in both years, so we did see an increase over the time. But in 2016, it was with the no cover treatment that actually increased slightly more than the cover crop. So basically, to start summarizing our results, none of the commercial soil health tests were consistently able to distinguish among cropping systems. And this may be related to the fact that we have just a short-term addition of cover crops. It was only 2 to 3 years of cover crops that were added to long-term no-till systems. Some of our sites had 30 years of no-till in place before cover crops were added. So we're looking at systems that probably had fairly high soil health originally because of the no-till in place. So it may require more time for those cover crops to make enough of a change that we can detect. With those, we did see that several measures showed a positive trend over time. So they did increase over time, which is a good sign for soil health and our use of these. But when we looked at those, only one of those measures, the active carbon that was a part of the Cornell test, increased to a greater degree with cover crops than without. We actually had several that showed the opposite, that they increased more without cover crops, and that included the CASH quality score, the Haney soil health calculation, and the Haney water extractable organic carbon. So basically from all of our results, we saw very high variability in most of our indicators, especially those that were soil biology measures. We also saw year-to-year changes, and I didn't really mention that too much just because of time, but we saw a lot of changes that we think may have been related to the CASH crop or the cover crop species a little bit that may that vary between year-to-year, the trends between these treatments, and that affected our ability to distinguish between cover and no cover in these long-term no-till systems. So ultimately, these difficulties combined with the large expense, these tests range between $50 and $110 per sample. They reduce the usefulness of these tests, at least for assessing short-term changes with cover crops. So I'd like to thank you for your time, and if there's time, I'll take some questions.
Excellent presentation. That's what we want to raise. Concern about test and interpretation, that some positive, some negative, so what we are measuring. So that's the question. So we have 2 minutes and she finished. Perfect timing. So we have a couple of questions you can ask. Okay?
Yes.
Is there any indication that the facts that you were looking at, whether it's the cover crop or whether it's the main crop, did they show any changes as a result of
So your question is about whether we saw changes to the CASH crop or other crops as a response to the cover crop. I think we certainly would expect to see changes with that, and I haven't really looked into the data with the yield or anything like that, but I think even that's very inconsistent, and it varies dramatically how those respond to it. So it's definitely something I would like to look into more, but I don't have the answer right now.
Well,
One more question.
Yes.
How long is the cover crop grown? For what time period?
So the cover crops are, it depends on the site. That varies because each of the on-farm sites that was done by the farmer. So they chose when to plant and when to terminate. I know several of the farmers have been doing this for many, have been doing cover crops for many years, and many of them, you know, plant green into the growing cover crop. So it varies dramatically across the site.
2 months or 1 month?
Yes.
Did you do all the sampling yourself, the Haney and Cornell and the Missouri Desert? Did you send those samples to?
So we, the question is about whether we sent them. We collected all of the soil samples. We did the collection as far as the partnership. It wasn't people necessarily at Purdue. It was the people who were working with the Conservation Cropping System Initiative and partners across the state who collected these samples and then bagged them and shipped them. And all of the actual analyses were done by the commercial laboratories, whether they were the University of Missouri, Ward Laboratories, did some PLFA for us as well, and then the Cornell and I believe USDA ARS actually lab did some of the work for the Haney test.
Thank you. Okay. Excellent talk.
Thank you.